That's good. Welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast, everybody. This is your host, Cody, and with me...
Nice.
My beautiful wife, Audrey.
Hi, guys. Thanks for that beautiful entrance for me.
It was a serenade.
Mm-hmm.
World's greatest podcast singer, me.
Okay.
Yeah, that was probably awful. I'm sorry, everyone who had to hear that. But welcome back to the History on the Rocks podcast. We are very happy to have you back. Last week was pretty fun.
It was.
We had...
Still can't believe that. The second one.
The Drunken Austrians and the Battle of Karen Siebes, who all killed each other, which may or may not be a true story. And then we had the Emu Wars, which was the Battle of the Flightless Birds.
Yeah.
/ Vermin in Australia, which that story still boggles my mind, but...
That's so crazy.
I think people really like that one, because our stats last week were going through the roof.
It's also like the shorter episodes.
Yeah,
I think
people really like the shorter episodes,
I like
too,
it too.
And we like it. It's easier for me to edit. It's not, you know, doesn't take me 3 hours to edit an hour, you know. Half hour only takes me about an hour and a half, but that's all good. It's not about me. It's about the listeners.
Yeah.
You know, so we're trying to provide... a product here on this podcast that is quick, easy to listen to, and fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely has to be fun.
But yeah, I've been really happy. Like, we've gotten more listeners over the last couple weeks. We have full-time subscribers have been going up. It's really been nice to see, like, the, you know, our analytics and stats. Like, that's not what it's not about the numbers to me, but it's really cool that people are listening like all around the world now.
Yeah, well, this is something that you've been wanting to do for a while, so
yeah, it's
pretty cool.
It's been really cool to actually like make this a reality. So we're gonna continue with it.
All right. Well, let's get into it.
What's the title of our first story today?
War of the Stray Dog.
War of the Stray Dog. Now this happens back in October of 1925. So just about, you know, 6-ish, 7 years after World War I, there was a conflict between Greek and Bulgarian forces that started with an interesting turn of events. In this region, there had been ethnic tensions and territorial disputes causing a rift between the two nations. Both were in the midst of trying to redraw their boundaries, and in one particular area called Petrich, the feud was especially heated. The roots of this boundary dispute lay after World War I, when Bulgaria was part of the losing side and was to give up territory it had lost in the Treaty of Neuilly. This was in 1919. The ethnic tension in this area was hot as the diversity of both Greeks and Bulgarians fought over the land. What happened next led to a military confrontation on either the 18th or 19th of October, depending on the source, and there would end up being many casualties because of this. Now, just as history always does, right? There are multiple sides to this story. Perspective, writings on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone points the finger at the other.
Yep.
Whatever. But first of all, the Greeks claimed that the Bulgarians had crossed over into their territory, killing a Greek officer and a sentry. And a sentry, if you don't know, is just a fancy word for a guard.
Oh, okay.
Now, obviously, this would cause some fighting when militaries are involved, because that's, you know, crossing over into another country, mm-hmm. Another territory, and killing their military officers and a lookout, obviously is going to start something.
Yeah.
But the other account of this story claims that a Greek soldier started the conflict when he ran over the border into Bulgaria chasing his dog.
Oh, gosh.
And they claimed that this was an act of war.
Just trying to get my dog.
We would be screwed.
Oh, so screwed.
With
especially
Chandler. we would be fighting everyone in the neighborhood. If we had to start a war with every property that Chandler ran onto.
Yeah.
Now, whichever happened first is not known. However, the Greeks demanded that those involved in the killing of the Greek officer and sentry, they must be punished, and Bulgaria would pay a fine of 2 million francs for the crime. The Bulgarians claimed this was all a big misunderstanding and refused the Greeks' demands. To enforce their demands, the Greeks sent their military into the area of Petrich, which was the headquarters of the Macedonian Bulgarian Committee. There was fighting, with Macedonians jumping into the fray as well, but at the end of it, 50 Bulgarian civilians were killed. The conflict then raised a greater concern that the Greeks would advance into other territories, including Italy and Yugoslavia. However, the League of Nations stepped in, and if you don't know what the League of Nations is, it was the UN back then, right? So all these countries that were supposed to be able to work out their differences and problems through the League of Nations so that war did not occur again. Huge failure. So the League of Nations steps in and immediately hashes out the Treaty of Petrich, which granted both sides rewards and drew a stable boundary in the region. Now, the incident is said to have been thrown out of proportion by the Greeks, who were playing a military game, knowing they heavily outnumbered the Bulgarians, who were forced to only have 20,000 troops max under the Treaty of New Ili. So I think the Greeks were playing this like political game here in order to get what they wanted and used the weak force of the Bulgarians as an excuse to like attack them.
I mean, yeah.
So like
makes sense.
If you sent like if you were actually chasing your stray dog over and you said like maybe the Bulgarians attacked you, right? You would have like a legitimate reason to like attack them.
Yeah. I would say so.
But the Bulgarians only took defensive positions and were told they would not fire unless they were attacked first.
They're saying we were attacked first. Bulgarians.
Well, no, the Bulgarians, they did not, like, attack the Greeks at all. All they did was take defensive positions as the Greeks came to them wanting a conflict. And they went by the old rule, like the old military rule when you're in country. Like, you are not to fire unless you are fired upon first.
Yeah.
So this conflict was actually turned into a war game, which is played with 15-millimeter, like, little figurines.
Oh, like an actual game.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. There's a little dog figurine as well. And you have to, like, move the dog. I don't know. It's on our website. You can go check it out on the episode page. But back in the 1920s, 30s, this was actually a popular game in Bulgaria and Greece. And it's kind of like Risk. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a strategic game of Risk. But there's all these like little Greek and Bulgarian soldiers, and you have to like strategically play this conflict out to win. As for the dog that started this whole debacle, it is unclear whatever happened to it.
Well.
But there is a picture of it on our website with its owner, a soldier, in a black and white photo.
Oh, well, hopefully the dog was returned.
Yeah.
Or caught by the right people.
But again, love to start these with a nice short little story like the War of the Stray Dog, because the dog just happened to go over the border and cause a big conflict, which, yes, would be a big misunderstanding.
And Oakley's really enjoying it because I can hear him dreaming right now. Yeah. He's having a puppy dream. He's dreaming of the stray dog.
You could probably hear him in the background going, he's running over the border of Bulgaria right now trying to cause a problem, knowing him. Our second story today, though, is actually the highlight of this episode, as the Emu War was in the last episode.
Yeah, that one was great.
Okay, this one is a border dispute between the United States and our friendly neighbors to the north, the Canadians, back on June 15th, 1859, on San Juan Island, which lies between the Straits of, Haro, and Rosario, up near Vancouver Island. And I know, because when you hear those names, you're going to think, like, oh, these are in the Caribbean or somewhere down in... Yeah, no.
Didn't know San Juan Island was up in that area, the northwest corridor up there.
Even the straits names, Haro and Rosario, are very Hispanic-sounding
names.
They
are.
Sure. And then San Juan Island, you're like, oh, this is going to be down...
Nice and beachy.
No, this is up near the island of Vancouver, which is cold 9 months out of the year. However, it's a very interesting story because this is one of the few times that the U.S. and Canada have almost been on the brink of war. So in June of 1846, the Treaty of Oregon was signed, which marked the border between Canada and the U.S. at the 49th parallel, from the Rocky Mountains to the middle of the channel, which separates the continent from Vancouver Island, then south through the channel to the Strait of Juan de Fuca, and west to the Pacific Ocean, according to the National Park Service website. The 49th parallel, when you look at a map today, is that flat line that's above like Montana and the tip of Idaho and the state of Washington. That is our modern day border of Canada and the U.S. If you go over to Washington, okay, and where the sea is there, there is like an imaginary border you have to draw between these islands to separate them from the U.S. and Canada, like where the boundary is between, because it's a small group of islands, and then Vancouver Island's very long. So if you're looking at a map, like you'll be able to see how this works out. It's that area which is under contention because there's so many little plots of land mm-hmm. and islands in that little like bay sea area.
I'm gonna have to look at a map.
Yeah,
I
definitely
like,
pull a map
can't
up.
Like, you can picture this.
Once you visualize it, you will totally understand what I'm talking about. But that's the area we're talking about, is that northwest corridor where the border of the United States and Canada is today, in that little inlet area. This is really the story about how that border is established. The issue in the Treaty of Oregon, was each country's interpretation of the, quote, channel, end quote, stated in the document. Now, there were only actually two channels that could have been used as the boundary, and the document did not specify which channel it was. So again, you have the Strait of Haro, which is located closer to Vancouver Island, and then you have the Strait of Rosario, which is closer to the mainland of Canada. So both Canada and the U.S. were claiming the entire island group, in which lies between the two straits. So if you're looking at that map again, that whole little group of islands,
mm-hmm.
there's two different straits that could bend the border in either Canada's favor or the U.S.'s favor.
I see that, yeah.
So now again, according to the National Park Service website, as early as 1845, the Hudson Bay Company, and I'm going to call them HBC going forward here, but the Hudson Bay Company, based at Fort Victoria, claimed San Juan Island only 7 miles across the Haro Strait. By 1851, the company established salmon curing stations along the island's western shoreline. By 1853, Washington Territory claimed the islands as U.S. possessions. So what we're looking at here is that the Hudson's Bay Company is Canadian side,
mm-hmm.
and they're actually still owned by the British. So Hudson's Bay Company is claiming this group of islands for themselves, but the people in Washington Territory are claiming those islands as U.S. possessions. So there's already a dispute here of who owns those islands, because again, they're both confused. Both sides are confused through the Treaty of Oregon of what channel it is that marks Canada from the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
In response, the HBC in December of 1853 established Bellevue Sheep Farm on San Juan Island's southern shore. While this move was politically motivated, the island's natural attributes made the farm highly profitable. The flock in a mere 6 years expanded from 1,369 to more than 4,500 scattered in sheep stations throughout the island. By claiming that southern tip of San Juan Island,
mm-hmm.
right, that's close to the United States,
yep.
The HBC is kind of making, like, it's marking its territory. Like, this whole island is ours.
Yeah.
Because we are at the southern tip and everything behind us is, you know, Canadian land.
Canadian land.
In 1859, word had spread about how rich the soil was on the island, and Americans started to claim land of their own on Hudson Bay Company's sheep farming land. 18 total Americans would settle there. The Americans believed this was a righteous move. However, the British labeled the Americans as trespassers, and over the next few days, tempers began to flare.
Ruh-roh.
We, obviously, are a country claiming our independence in 1776, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're about 80-ish years old here, and the Canadians are still part of Britain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the British are still involved here. And obviously, we don't have that great of a relationship with the British still.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're still a little salty that someone became their own country.
Oh, bummer.
But, again, tempers are going to begin to flare here because there's this contention over the sheep farming land. The incident that would stir up the controversy happened on June 15th, 1859, when an American named Lyman Cutler shot and killed one of the HBC's pigs, which had gotten into his garden.
Oh, man, he wanted bacon.
He wanted Canadian bacon. The British authorities threatened to arrest Cutler and remove all of the Americans from the island. In response to this, the Americans sought protection from the U.S. military, specifically from Brigadier General William S. Harney, who was outright anti-British, the perfect guy to have involved, an anti-Brit.
Mm-hmm.
The Brigadier General sent 64 men to the island of San Juan, who set up camp just north of the HBC sheep farm near Griffin Bay. In response, the governor of Vancouver Island, James Douglas, ordered the British Navy to send 3 ships led by Captain Geoffrey Phipps Hornby over to remove Pickett's encampment, but be sure not to cause an armed conflict with the Americans. Pickett naturally refused to withdraw from the area. and the Americans then wrote Brigadier General Harney for more help. 171 more American troops came to help reinforce Pickett and his encampment. The camp was surrounded by 14 field cannons and 8 naval guns that they dismounted from the USS Massachusetts. While the Americans set up their guns, the British conducted drills with their naval guns, firing shots into the nearby bluffs. It is stated that, quote, "it was all great fun for tourists arriving on excursion boats from Victoria, not to mention the officers from both sides who attended church services together aboard the Satellite and shared whiskey and cigars in Charles Griffin's tidy home," end quote. So this is how comical this is. It starts with a pig dying.
Yeah.
An American kills one of the HBC's pigs that's on his property.
Yeah.
And then they're doing these military operations to, like, force each other's hand or, like, show force. I don't know. It's like a, you know, bring out the measuring sticks kind of situation. And this is a kid's show, so I'm not going to explain that. If you don't get it, then that's your fault.
This is a kid's show.
Well, it is. Some of my high schoolers have been listening, so I got to keep it PG-13 here.
Oh, okay.
However, you have members of the U.S. military and members of the British Navy that are going to church together, having whiskey and cigars together, and watching all of this happen.
We're just going to hang out.
It's like entertainment for them.
It probably was.
Yeah, this would be kind of funny. Be like, this started like,
this
over
is what we're
pig.
Fighting over.
Yeah. Now, the National Park Service states that, quote, "throughout the remaining days of July and well into August, Hornby accumulated more Marines, the majority veterans of amphibious landings under fire in China. However, Hornby wisely refused to take any action against the Americans until the arrival of Rear Admiral Lambert Baines, commander of British naval forces in the Pacific."
Loving the accent on the names here.
Appreciate that. All of our British listeners are going to be like, I'm done with this guy. All of those subscribers I talked about at the beginning of the episode.
Yeah, bye.
Just left. Sorry. Now, Baines is appalled at the whole situation and advised Douglas that he would not, quote, "involve two great nations in a war over a squabble about a pig," end quote.
A pig.
Could you imagine that? The U.S. and the Canadians, we go to war with them, and the British, again, because of a pig?
Don't kill the pigs.
Don't kill the pigs. This odd situation developing at San Juan Island finally reached Washington, D.C., not the state, in which the highest of politicians from both nations couldn't believe that a pig had almost started an armed conflict between the two nations. General Winfield Scott, very prominent member of the U.S. military, who had settled multiple border conflicts with Canada before, was sent by President James Buchanan, totally not worth talking about in U.S. history.
Irrelevant president.
Very irrelevant. To alleviate the situation once again. Now, General Scott arrived 6 weeks later and recommended a joint military occupation until the conflict was resolved. Now, both countries agreed on terms, and Brigadier General Harney was reassigned for allowing the situation to needlessly escalate. It was inferred that the Brigadier General's personal feelings toward the Americans swayed his decision to escalate. American troops were also removed from the islands. The joint occupation of both militaries lasted for 12 years until 1871, when both sides signed the Treaty of Washington. Yeah.
This took a long time to be resolved.
This dude killed a pig, caused this whole uproar on this island, and it took 12 years until both sides signed the Treaty of Washington. And for some reason, the border dispute question of San Juan was referred to Kaiser Wilhelm I of Germany for a resolution. The Kaiser took the resolution to a 3-man arbitration council who sided with the United States on the border dispute, and the boundary would be placed through the Strait of Haro, giving San Juan Island and the rest of those little islands you'll see on the map to the United States completely. The legacy of this quote-unquote war would be that the only casualty was one little pig.
Oh, poor piggy. I mean, at least there was no other casualties for something so stupid.
Can't make this
and
shit up.
Silly.
The 1850s, 1860s, that had to be a fun time.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
That had to be crazy. Like, no rules. There's no rules in the 1800s.
I mean, like, there were, but people, it was easier to, like, get away with stuff.
I mean,
you're just like.
Like, Jack the Ripper. Like, still don't know who Jack the Ripper is after he killed so many women. Like the 1800s, like best time to be a serial killer.
Okay, well, we really shifted gears there.
Well, I'm just saying, like, there's no rules in the 1800s. The Wild West. Yeah. There's no rules.
Yeah, I want to go there. I want to go back to that time.
That is one we talked about when you asked me, like...
Yeah, what time would you go back to?
If you went back in history, what would be the one... What would be the time?
I'd go to the Wild West for sure.
There's so many, though, I would go back to. Like, that's a tough question for me to answer. Because, like, I want to go see World War II in action. I want to go to Egypt, ancient Egypt, like way, 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 way back when there was pharaohs.
See, I don't think I'd want to go way, 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 way back.
I want to go back to, I would go to the Wild West too, to see what that was like. Like I said, no rules, had to be a lot of fun.
Just riding horses, shooting guns.
The American Revolution, just
drinking whiskey.
Just drinking whiskey and causing fucking mayhem. Just throwing tea into the harbor.
Hey, this is for kids. Watch your language.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure in PG-13 you can use like one fuck before it turns into
rated R. Okay, well now it's two.
Well now it's two, so.
Explicit version.
Well, I'll tag explicit on this episode because I said the F word. The F word.
Yep.
But seriously, like the 1700s, like late 1700s, when we don't give two shits about anything and we're throwing tea in the harbor, we're punching British soldiers in the face for no apparent reason. We're not paying our taxes. Which
yeah, let's do
right
that.
Now. Yeah, I would love to not pay my taxes right now.
That'd be great. I'd have a lot of money.
About to say things I probably shouldn't on a podcast.
It's not political.
Damn you, IRS. But yeah, the 1800s, like I said, just be wild.
Yeah, well, I'm sad the pig died. Hopefully yeah. the dog died.
Well, the dog is obviously dead.
Hopefully it did not die during...
I don't think it died during the conflict because there's a picture of it. So I'm pretty sure the dog came back at some point, but there's...
It went back over to the other side.
Yeah. Head over to our Facebook, Instagram page. I'm going to throw a post up there. Tell us in history what would be the one time or era that you would want to go back to see IRL in real life, as the kids would say.
In what era?
In what era would you want to go back to? And don't say, like, the 1980s or 1970s. Like, no. We're talking about, like, history. Like, when, like, people that we know now weren't alive. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I guess World War II was
pushing that. I was thinking, I'm like, wait, you said World War II, though, but that's definitely...
But that generation's dying out.
They
are. That one's almost gone. So I think that's, like, the edge right there.
Because when did it end?
The edge is 1944.
Okay.
No, 1944.
And boomers are 46 to 64.
What is it? 44?
46 to 64 are boomers.
Yes, yeah, because, I'm sorry, World War II ends, I was thinking D-Day, which is June 6, 1944. World War II ends in 1945, and then because the end of World War II, they start the boomers at 46, 1946, and then it goes to what?
64
is what you said?
46, 64.
Yeah.
It's the only reason why I know that.
Okay, so the end of World War II is where you have to draw the line on the era that you would go back to.
Okay. So nothing post.
Nothing post 1945.
World War II.
Or, yeah, post 1945. Post World War II. Because, like, I get it. Because, like, decades, right? If I wanted to go back to another decade, I would go back to the 1980s.
Yeah, I was going to say, you would definitely go back to the 80s.
Best music, crazy hair metal. Like, the 1980s had to be a lot of fun, and my aunt lived through the 1980s, and I'm very jealous of her experiences in the 80s, because they sounded a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm sure it was a lot of fun. Or even just, like, we're born in early 90s in 91, but, like, being a teenager in the 90s would have been kind of cool.
Yeah. I think... No.
No? Okay.
No. Maybe.
Like Rhea.
Yeah, Rhea.
Was a teenager in the 90s.
She was. 1994, she turned 10. See, I would want to be like in my 20s in the 1980s. Like I probably should have been born in like 1967.
Okay.
Turning 20 in like 1987. That would have been fun. That would have been a good time. Yeah.
Then you'd be... kind of old now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
On that note.
On that note. Another nice 30-minute episode.
Yeah.
For Season 1, Episode 14, Our Ridiculous Conflicts, Part 2. And you all, of course, have a wonderful weekend.
Enjoy your weekend.
Go relax, see some friends and family, sit back, have a drink.
Our summer starts.
Yes.
Woohoo!
Summer is starting. When you're hearing this Thursday morning at 6 a.m.
Yes!
We are sleeping in because we have no more school.
Well, let's hope our daughter lets us do that because, you know.
She's been good lately.
Okay. She was up early today.
Well, it is what it is. Thank y'all for listening to the History on the Rocks podcast, and we will see you next week.
See ya. Cheers.
Cheers.